It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Don't forget, this hour we're going to be giving away some tickets to tomorrow's Winter Hawks game. We'll be playing Seattle tomorrow. And we got tickets to the Faux Film Festival, which is coming up Wednesday at the Hollywood Theater. And later on this week, we're actually going to talk to some of the guys behind it. We've also got something cooking with the guys at Sportfight, Matt Valor Lindland, and Randy Couture will be giving details on that as the week goes on. Also, another potentially very big announcement, and I don't even want to hint at it. I don't want to give any clues. I don't want to be any vague discussion about it, because as soon as I say it, then I'm going to jinx it. It's not going to happen. Coming up this hour, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian is going to be here. Rick Dude, Kathy Rigby is the Olympic chick that used to do tampon commercials. Mike, and here's the great thing about that is I've actually got at home somewhere. I believe it's in my basement. I've actually got an aerobic. It's not aerobics. It's, what was that thing in it? Jazzercise? Is that thing that jazz? Was that horrible thing that they did in the 80s where it was like a step one, two, and
yes.
And it was the Pilates of its time.
Yes, it really was. But I've got a Kathy Rigby Jazzercise record that is sponsored by Stay Free MaxiPad. And it's got this, I'll bring it in tomorrow, we can play. It's got this great little, you put on the drop the needle, there's the whole crackling. And then you hear, Stay Free MaxiPads presents Jazzercise. And it's just like, and it's Kathy Rigby. And there's like a little floor chart that comes with it that shows you where to step, like it was an Arthur Miller.
Like Twister?
Yeah, like it was one of those dance companies. And it's like a whole lot of, keep going. Feel the burn. 2, 4, lift, spread. And it's horrible. So we'll play that tomorrow. I got this whole treasure trove of vinyl. You want to talk about show material? I got, when I went over to Mike Everhart's house, and I was going through his 45 collection because he was getting rid of the ones he didn't really want. Man, and I picked up all of these 45s from the 80s. 45s, we went through this bizarre period in the 80s, too, where every 45 came with an instrumental version. Whether you wanted it or not, whether it was any song you would ever need an instrument. Why would you ever need an instrumental version of Party All the Time by Eddie Murphy? Like, for what possible reason? In what universe is that a thing that you would ever find a function for? No one knows. I guess it was just like if you were some zany zoo DJ and you wanted to, you wanted to write some parody for it. There you are. You're front loaded with the song. I don't know. So well, in my basement, in my vinyl collection, I have many things that we can go through on the air vinyl wise. Rick, you never talked about Sarah and her roller derby experience. Sarah?
It was awesome.
So this is, what team did you go to see?
Went to see all of them, actually, because Sean the engineer was able to get us press passes.
Because he's the man with the roller derby hookup.
Yes, so I took my boyfriend who loved to watch the girls. I mean, all it is just like butts and legs. That's all you watch the entire time.
That should be our slogan here at the KLOL. This is the, now, roller derby is one of those things that I've only ever seen on television and in that movie. What was that?
It's more wonderful than you could ever imagine. You would love it.
What was that movie, Tim, from the 70s? Kansas City Bombers?
Yeah.
And so is it just hot chicks on skates beating each other's asses?
It's these girls in all these elaborate costumes. There was the guns and rollers, and they were all dressed as little rock and roll girls.
Oh, fantastic.
And, yeah, they all had different names, different outfits, slamming into each other, like saw somebody lose a couple teeth.
Good times.
Yeah.
They used to have the play-by-play, and I said that would yell, whoa, Nelly. Every time one was knocked over.
Now, do they have a guy doing play-by-play?
They had a couple people doing play-by-play, but I was going to tell you, Storm Large did the national anthem.
Really?
It was incredible. She has a voice from God, that woman.
Oh, well, yeah.
I haven't heard it in so long.
Well, Storm and roller derby, that's two great tastes that are just a natural. Those things taste great together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw her sing. I hadn't seen Storm sing live anywhere for a long time, and then, because I've been at home hiding my desperate unemployed shame, and then we went to Dante's for New Year's. And so they did a great show, and then she did, Auld Lang Syne, and yeah. So anyway, so
that was awesome. It was packed. There were like 1,000 people there. It seemed like there was beer. There were a lot of like fun people, a lot of people our age and older folks.
So now you're going to be going back. You're going to be going back to watch.
Absolutely, I'm not going to miss one. It was.
You
so
should totally be
good.
Out. You should. Be, Sarah Dillon should be joining a roller derby team.
They're such tough girls, though.
Are they Amazons? Are they big girls?
No, not at all. They're like normal-sized girls. I mean, some of them are bigger, but, just
well, like because you say Storm, and you think, like, that's a girl who could throw an elbow in a roller derby match.
Well, they all look strong.
But, they're not like Amazon women.
No.
They're not like WNBA chicks
like
or something.
It looked like a lot of fun.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You should totally do that.
Sean's actually looking into seeing what steps you can take in order to...
Oh, come on, man. It's a natural.
I'd really, really like to do it.
Well, you have to... fill out the proper application.
You want to, spike attendance. You put you out there. You have Sarah Dillon.
Yeah.
Think, I mean, what a multifaceted cross promotional life you would be leading. You do coin in the morning. You come here. You do this dumb show, and then you're out there throwing an elbow in the roller derby. That's what I'm talking about. We don't need billboards, sister. We got you. You're our billboard.
Thanks.
You're the. I mean, I'm saying it's a good thing. You'd be our walking promotion.
Just without any sleep or
I'm
anything.
Just, oh, sleep. Sleep is for lightweight. Sleep is
okay.
For the weak.
Sleep is for old people.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. You can sleep when you're ancient. Abe Vigoda doesn't sleep. He's out there. Mike Wallace doesn't sleep. You don't
need
to sleep.
He's 87.
That's what I'm saying. All right. Well, we'll do the Peter Carlin thing here at the bottom of the hour. Let's go to the city desk with your personal savior, Tim Riley.
From higher top to bottom of the coin tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is the City Desk Newsbeat. Tim Riley reporting breaking news. That couple rescued last week from a snowbound motorhome has disappeared.
Oh,
Albert and
coming.
Becky Higginbotham, again notoriety as they, their son and daughter-in-law, and their grandchildren survived 17 days in the snowy Oregon wilderness. But when Arizona deputies saw them on national television, they recognized they're wanted for drug and weapons charges.
Oh, go figure.
Well, deputies went over to their house today in Ashland to serve extradition papers and found the Higginbothams gone. When last seen, the Higginbothams were northbound in that same 35-foot motorhome with Arizona license plates that was previously stuck in the snow.
If you close your eyes, you can just hear the banjo music playing in the background of this whole story.
That young fellow who killed six people at a house party over the weekend in Seattle had brought three guns, more than 300 pounds of ammunition, a baseball bat, a black machete, and told guests as he blazed away, quote, there's plenty for everyone, unquote.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's unnerving.
Mm-hmm. Aaron Kyle Hupp, 28, was clearly intent in doing homicidal mayhem, said Deputy Chief Clark Killimer.
Mission accomplished.
Anyway, apparently, the trust of these partygoers were shattered Saturday morning when Huff opened fire at a house full of ravers dressed like zombies.
Is ravers in quotes?
In dark clothing and pale makeup. Now, for all you people who aren't kids, raves are parties that attract youngsters who dance to thumping, bass-laden electronic music.
Jesus God.
Often are themed events where people dress up in Halloween-like costumes and paint their faces.
On ecstasy.
Totally. They're all on ecstasy. All that's missing from this story is, and they meet on MySpace.
Friday night's rave dubbed Better Off Undead drew about 500 people, according to organizers.
That's just unfortunate.
Oh, man.
Well, then Huff committed suicide when confronted by an officer outside the house early Saturday.
Yeah, saving us money.
The victims, yes, many were dressed as zombies in black and white face paint, had met Huff earlier in the night at a rave called Better Off Dead and invited them to party in their rental home. Well, Huff left the party at 7 a.m. and returned wearing ammunition and carrying a 12-gauge pistol grip shotgun and a handgun he fired at 30 party goers. At a television news conference, detectives displayed an assault rifle, baseball bat, and machete seized from Huff's pickup truck, and he had more than 300 rounds of ammunition. The attack was clearly premeditated and well-planned, an assault on innocent youngsters.
This is totally going to be, and you know, God, I'm so glad we don't live in Seattle right now, because you know that every idiot local newscast there is leading with that. They're called raves. Is your child at risk? We'll tell you tonight at 11.
Well, police discovered that Huff's twin knew nothing of his brother's intentions. Huff was delivering pizza during the 5 years he lived in Seattle. They were twin teddy bears, said Regina Gray, manager of Town and Country Apartments. He and his twin brother were the kindest, sweetest, gentlest people.
Up until the point when he got the pistol grip shotgun and the machete out. All right. All right.
So you got to be aware of these people going to these so-called raves.
These so-called raves, okay. What with their thumping bass lines and their painted faces. Okay, whatever you say.
Stay away from your ex-wife, David Hasselhoff has been told. His estranged wife, Pamela Bark, apparently filed some suit against him, and there have been instances of domestic violence, she said. One incident, the police officers was summoned, but didn't give Bach an emergency protection order. Hasselhoff's publicist said the actor denies Bach's allegations and declines to elaborate out of consideration for the children, which is always remains a paramount concern. He's not going to discuss this publicly. Hasselhoff filed for divorce January 12th. So that was that. Time for the Cheney Watch.
Here's your Cheney Watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Show.
Every time I see you looking my way, baby, baby, can't you hear my heartbeat? Baby, baby,
you, baby.
Dick Cheney defends the spying program, arguing that the U.S. is on the offensive in Iraq. Vice President Dick Cheney urged Americans not to ignore hopeful signs of democracy in that war-torn region.
And those signs are what again? I think I blinked and missed them.
I'm not sure what that... Oh, they're building new schools and trash is being picked up.
Okay.
And people are going to work. He also defended the president's terrorism surveillance program as a vital tool in the war on terrorism. He was speaking at a Republican fundraiser in Arizona for Senator John Kyle. He also called the efforts in Congress to censor President Bush an outrageous proposition, promising the president will continue to authorize eavesdropping programs because our nation is still at risk of attack. We will not sit back and wait to be hit again, Cheney said, to the loudest applause of the evening. The vice president was in Tucson for less than 2 hours, bringing together about 600 GOP faithful at the Western La Paloma Resort and Spa for a Republican pep rally. Attendees munched on Peruvian roasted chicken breast and creme brulee after Cheney's 20-minute speech and ended the evening with a stump speech by Kyle. About a dozen Tucson business executives paid $10,000 apiece for a private audience with Cheney before his speech, with proceeds to benefit the Arizona Republican Party. That's that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. As Iraqi defense forces are straightened out in the political process mature, Cheney said, the number of U.S. soldiers in Iraq would decrease. So did Condi Rice. She said that yesterday.
Good times. There's your Cheney watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Show. All right, let's do one more here, and then we have some things to do before the break.
Happy birthday to Apple Computer, 30 years old. Apple's journey began in 1976 when two college dropouts, Steve Jobs, a marketing whiz, and his friend Steve Wozniak, an engineering genius, filed partnership papers on April Fool's Day with eyes set on building and selling personal computers. The Apple Lisa, introduced in 1983, used an innovative icon and a mouse for the first time. Its high price, $9,995, sent business users to PCs from rival IBM Corporation. The Macintosh followed 1984, giving birth to desktop publishing and allowing users to create their own newsletters and printed material.
And to be snobby at a rate never before seen by any users of any application or any technology. Don't give me that look. You give me the Apple look. And I know that Apple stare, too. Everybody knows that. The smug, condescending look of the Apple Macintosh user. Sure, they're a fine computer.
They are indeed.
I'm not saying a damn thing. The first computer I ever used was a Macintosh.
Good.
I'm not casting aspersions in anything. All right, there you go. We'll have more from the city desk at the bottom of the hour. Also, Peter Carlin, TV critic from the Oregonian, is going to be here. We got all this. I got all of this stuff to get to, and all of this stuff in the paper that I wanted to talk about. But before we progress any further, we saw that there was that Willamette week that came out last week that had us, you know, there was on the front the whatever Rick Emerson Show,
yeah.
The Portland's Answer to Howard Stern, and they did this whole thing about meth. Did you see the front of the Willamette, which is it was all about meth madness, and it apparently was this whole story about how the Oregonian, they claim the Oregonian just fabricated the meth epidemic in Portland.
Oh yeah, it became a Nova special.
Yeah, that there was the
on
meth
PBS.
The meth problem in Portland really wasn't that bad, and it was a whole lot of it was just created a thin air. And I don't know whether that's true or not. I got to tell you, I was walking out of my house. Let's see, what's today? Monday. So on Friday night, I was walking out of my house to walk my dog at like 11 o'clock before I went to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm lame, so there I am going to bed at like 11:30 on a Friday. But I'm going to take Max out for a walk, and there's not one, not two, not three, but four. Four. This is something that never happens in your neighborhood, by the way, Tim Riley. This is you have never walked out of your house and seen four cop cars parked on the street.
I used to when I lived in St. John, so there.
But
even more.
But you know what I'm talking. Sarah, you probably know it too, even in the relatively decent area where you live.
Oh yeah, my roommate's car got broken into a couple nights ago.
Yes, me too. Right. It's like it was just the other day, a couple weeks ago, actually, right before, it was the week before we came on the air. I'm taking Laura to work in the morning. We're leaving the house at like 6:30. I leave the front door. I walk down the steps. We're walking to the car, and I got my coffee in one hand and my newspaper in the other, and you're walking along, and you hear that crunch, crunch. What's that crunching sound? You look down, and there's your driver's side window.
Broken glass.
Yeah, all over the whatever. And they're such idiots. It is tempting to believe that it's all drugs, because they're such morons. I have for my car, for Christmas, Laura and I, not the whole backstory, but Laura and I do this thing where we don't spend a lot of money on gifts for each other. What we do is we buy like a joint gift, and then we buy each other like some small stuff. And our joint gift was a GPS. was a global positioning system that mounts inside the car. You've heard it, Sarah. You've witnessed it.
You love that
it's
thing.
It's the best thing ever. Well, because I'm
like,
an
we'll
idiot.
We'll be going two blocks, and you have to, like, take an extra 5 minutes to program in the address.
It's genius. It's the best device in the history. And I don't make any money from plugging this, but it's the TomTom. I think IMS advertises it. But it's fantastic. You just put in the address. It's got, like, a keyboard, you know, a little virtual keyboard, so you can type in the name of the store if you don't know where it is.
Bruce Agler has one of his cards, a lady.
Yeah, mine is an Australian guy named Ken. Although you can have it speak Mandarin Chinese, and I think for $5 a month you can have it talk like John Cleese. Yet to be determined. But the GPS is the best thing ever, because I'll just punch in whatever the address is, and it's at the next light, turn left. Yeah, and I need never, like when I went over to drop something off at Sarah's boyfriend's house, I'm like, well, what's the address? And she's like, okay, well, you turn left, it's hard to find, but you're going to have to go over through the roundabout. And I'm like, no, I don't need the directions. Just give me the address.
I know, and I wasn't even ready because I'm so used to you being late because you get lost.
Because I'm an idiot, because I can never, going from here to the bathroom, I get lost. So I put in the address, GPS gets me right there. But it mounts on the inside of the windshield with this suction cup arm thing, right? And so I park the car at night. Obviously, I don't leave the GPS in the car. I snap off the GPS, I take it inside. But I leave the sort of plastic mounting arm. I mean, it basically is just like a glorified coffee cup holder. But I leave that in the car. We come out the next day. They've smashed the window of my car, and they've stolen the mounting arm, which is worth like $16. It does nothing. It is the very definition of useless, because there's nothing you can... It's like it's like snapping one of those things that holds flowers inside a Volkswagen Bug. It's like, well, you can do nothing with it. And so it's proof that criminals are just the dumbest people on earth, because they must have just seen it and went, oh, that's a bright, shiny object. I got to own that. So they smash out my window. It cost me $200 to get my window repaired.
Yikes.
They steal this. So the upshot of it is that the GPS still works, but I got to hold it in my hand. So I'm like, and it's made out of slippery plastic. So I'm like driving with one hand, holding the GPS. It's like a traffic accident waiting to happen.
Well, also, beat the gas pedal.
Yes, completely.
Well, the thing was distracting anyway. I mean, when we were driving, it's so distracting to watch the map as we're driving.
Because
anyway.
As you're driving, it shows you a view from above of your
exactly
car on the road.
Exactly where you are, yeah.
And you totally, the temptation is to not look out the windshield. The temptation is just to steer by looking at the GPS screen. And when you first turn it on, you got to fill out like, you got to hit like 8 different terms of service, you know, agreements where it's like, I promise not to stare at this while driving. And if I kill someone, it's not the GPS's fault. Anyway, so they stole that from my car, and so I see, like, 4 cop cars in front of my house, and I'm thinking maybe it's another thief, maybe it's whatever, but no, of course, it's meth. But then that goes right up against this Willamette article about how the meth problem is all fabricated, and that got me to thinking about this. Look, we've, at one time or another, Sarah has lived in Southeast now for a few years. I've lived in Southeast the entire time, almost the entire time that I've been back in Portland. Probably 6 years now I've lived in Southeast. You didn't live in Southeast, but you lived in St. John's, right?
Which is worse than all of them put together.
Yeah, I mean, St. John's really is. It's, you know,
it's the only place where property depreciates every year.
It's St. John's.
My taxes actually went down. My property taxes went down this past year. I was so happy, and I know why. I needn't ask.
Because it's just like, it's like little Beirut over there. But it got me thinking about meth, and I mean, you know, I'm kind of the world's most boring human. I don't think anybody in this show has like a drug habit or drug dependency that I know of. But I mean, how shall I put this? We've all been around. We're all adults. We travel in various social circles. We've all
worked in small market radio.
We've all worked in radio. We all have friends who are perhaps living out there on society's fringes, shall we say. We all know Jen Lane. So
there are lots of free spirits out there.
I guess what I'm saying is, I've been in Portland for like 8 years. I know a whole lot of people who, you know, on a whole bunch of levels of society. And I know a lot of scummy people is what I'm saying. I don't think I've ever in my life, I don't think I've ever even seen meth. I don't think I've ever seen it. I don't think I've ever had it. Have you ever, Sarah, have you ever had anybody offer you meth?
No, I don't even know what it looks like.
I'm not trying to cast aspersions on you and your friends. I'm just saying.
No. I mean, I've seen lots of drugs, but I've never seen meth.
Because we've all been at that party where it's like,
What is it? Is it?
You're asking me like I know.
God, we're so white.
I mean, no, I'm just saying. It's like, look.
We're not white and uneducated.
I mean, we've all been at that party where there's the guy with the weed. I mean, it's Portland. We've all been at the party where there's the guy with the coke. We've all been at the party where there's, you know, the guy with the whatever. And he's like, hey, they have whatever in the back room. Do you want to, you know, and In radio, you meet people constantly who want to give you cocaine. And I know that that sounds like a job perk. And I suppose maybe in some circles it is.
And all I need is a number 5 for this song.
That's totally what it is. I need 40 spins.
Uh-huh.
If you can see your way clear to giving this Statler Brothers record.
I know it's a bad record.
That's how it used to be. It was totally, that's exactly what it was. It was, look, if you can make this Billy Squire an ad for next week, there's a...
I've got some decent concert tickets.
There's some backstage passes and a little vial in your future. Like, I used to know a program director. I've told this story with the CBS record rep. I shouldn't even say it was a CBS
way
record
way back
rep.
When.
No, this was like 15 years ago. Yes. But the guy from CBS Records would show up and he's like, so here's that Scorpions record. Here's your cocaine. I mean, it was like a total, you know, in radio, you get cocaine offered you all the time. My whole life, I've never even seen meth. I wouldn't know where to get meth if I had to. And so it makes me wonder whether the meth thing really is, I'm not saying it doesn't happen because we all kind of hear about it, but I don't know if it's blown out of proportion or not. I mean, sir, you're asking, I wouldn't know. You could put it on the counter in front of me, I wouldn't know what it looks like. I mean, it's not a snorted thing, like it's a smoking thing, right? Like you smoke it?
Like a crack pipe kind of thing?
Yeah, I believe so.
I guess. So, I don't know. I mean, it's
made with like mason jars and lye.
I don't necessarily know that I want to have a bunch of people calling up telling me like where it is that you do go to buy it. All I'm saying is...
The phones aren't ringing at the moment.
No, because I'm not asking, and thank you, because I'm not asking people to tell us where to get meth. I'm in no way am I asking. I'm just making the observation that it does seem as rampant as all kinds of recreational drug users in this country, and as many different kinds of people as we run into.
Well, it's conducive to the Northwest, according to the NOVA document.
I do. See, thanks, Tim. See, now here come the meth calls.
Nope.
Here come the, do you know that quick stop on 5th and... I'm just saying it does seem like one of those things that maybe is the slightest bit blown out of proportion. Because or maybe they just don't like to share. Who knows? Are these people asking where they can buy meth?
Yeah, hang on just a second.
Yes?
This guy's calling to ask if he can have Tim's autograph.
What does that have
to do
with... I don't
know. Can he hook us up with a vial?
Only if you donate to the children.
All right. Well, let's get a few. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Todd.
Hey, Todd. How are you?
Not too bad.
What? How can I help you today?
Well, just to say about the whole meth thing, there's that movie Spun that's out, and they snort it the entire time.
So they, Spun, yeah, is it meth or is it just like generic speed? I heard about that film. It's got Jason Schwartzman in it.
Yeah, it's a really obnoxious movie. It kind of makes you feel like you ran around the block 4 times after you
watched
it. But they snort it throughout the whole movie. I'm not sure if it's crank speed, but I'm pretty sure it's meth and profession.
I used to know a guy that had this guy, and of course they're all radio employees. I used to know this guy that had what he claimed, he would always talk about being on speed, and he had some packet of something or other that he was always snorting, and it was like in amounts way too large for it to be cocaine, I think.
All right,
thank you, sir. Let me ask you this. Have you ever been at a place where you saw meth or had it offered to you?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
All right, thank you, sir.
All right, thanks, Rick.
All right, there you go. Okay. That's what I'm saying. So what's up? What is it? Somebody who wanted Tim? He just called up because he wanted Tim's autograph?
Yeah.
Well, all right then.
Okay.
All right then. Okay, good times. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take a break here. We'll come back. We have Peter Carlin for the Oregonian. And later on, we got Likas at 3, world famous Phil Henry Show at 7. Nothing. It's going to be nothing but meth calls from now to the top of the hour. I know that it's true. All right. We'll be back. It is the Rick Emerson Show. We're live from Portland. 503-733-2970. It is the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. We are live from Portland. We're back after this. Show live from Portland. Thank you for coming by. It's 503-733-2970. See, I should have known. Here come the meth emails. Rick, this email says, I was walking with my mom, who is 65, through PSU going to a chamber music concert, and we were offered meth. We were told it was the best in town. We politely declined. I thought you had to work at Freightliner or something to get offered meth.
Oh, that's a tourist.
That's Dan. Yes, that's Dan in Vancouver. Rick. Methamphetamines are manufactured in two ways. See, you asked the Rick Emerson audience, the Rick Emerson audience replies. One comes from a crystallized form that can be crushed into a fine powder and snorted, much like crank or cocaine. See, I thought crank was meth. Don't bother to call and tell me that. I don't know another distinction. Has a much more distinct smell and taste. The other, liquid meth, is manufactured by not letting it crystal... Okay. Then can be shot directly into your chosen vein. Okay. That's good times. Let's see. This email says, Rick, in case anybody should ask, you can... Thank you. Because I'm likely to be queried about this on the way home. You can shoot it, smoke it, snort it, or put it anywhere else you can think of. Think suppositories. You know... Anytime you are recreationally inserting any sort of a chemical into an unusual orifice on your body, you might want to start to, I don't know, reassess some of the choices you've been making in your life. See, look at this. Just nothing. Meth in Corvallis. The city's formerly known as Corvallis. Rick, I lived in Corvallis last year. It was infamous for meth use. Whenever my band would play, there would be people there on meth, and in some cases, even doing meth at the show. There was a guy who was shot by a police officer just a few months ago in Corvallis who was supposedly on meth, too. See, but I wonder, and we have to do the news desk here, and then we'll talk to Peter Carlin, but I do wonder if the meth thing of today is like the PCP thing of the 80s. Because you all who were my age remember growing up in the 80s when every criminal was on PCP. It was all like, every story had the phrase, police believe the man was on PCP because he exhibited superhuman strength.
Running into traffic naked, refusing to stop.
Yeah, and it was all like a lot of like, it let you pick up cars and hurl them at police officers, Bruce Banner style. Rick, you can both, okay.
Nothing short of a bullet would have stopped it.
Just going to move on. Let's get these calls real quickly, and then we'll touch Peter Carlin. Hi there, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
This is Adrian. How you doing, man?
Hi, Adrian. How are you, sir?
Doing good. Hey, it sounds like most of your questions got answered by your emails, but
yes.
Most of the meth that I've pulled off of people that I've arrested has been like a really, it's this really scummy brown powder. It does not look like something you'd want to put in your body.
Okay.
And we've had guys that snort it, smoke it. The guys are really gross for the guys that are injecting it because without this turning to a whole don't do drugs kids thing, it's just, you know, awful scabs, just, you know. Skin missing. It's
skin missing. Oh, my God.
One of the reasons it's such an epidemic is a lot of drugs are kind of, you know, I don't know, they're self-correcting. Like, you get a guy that's a heroin addict, he's going to fix and he's going to go nod off in a corner somewhere.
Right.
When you're doing meth, it keeps you up. So it's like, you know, you're up and you're on a binge and you're going and you're criminally minded. And you see these guys are on drugs, even up for, you know, 48 hours at a time. Even if you didn't have any drugs in your system, you know, after 48 hours, you're insane. I mean,
right.
You're hallucinating.
That's when people break into nice houses.
Says the Tannis-born resident. Okay. So if you're not crazy when you start doing meth, you will become crazy.
You will, and it'll eventually also do just enough organic damage to your brain to where you're just you're always gonna.
Well, you had me at skin missing. You know what I mean? Like, I picture some sort of a guy putting up flyers in a pole, like skin missing. If seen, please contact. You know, so, all right, well, I guess any inkling we ever had that we were going to do that on the show just went away. So.
Yeah, you might want to skip that one.
All right, thank you, Adrian.
All right, buddy, take
care. All right, there you go. Let's get one more. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Joshua.
Hi, Joshua. How can I help you?
Same thing. The point of the Willamette Week article that they kind of missed because they're just so against the Oregonian was the fact that this sort of thing's been around for a long time.
Well, I mean, the Germans had methamphetamine that they gave their troops in World War II.
And that's the other thing. Methamphetamine is a specific chemical. Amphetamines is like a category. That brown stuff the officer was talking about,
right.
That's crank. That's, that's the sort of thing you're going to make with pseudoephedrine. That's the sort of thing you're going to make in your trailer. Methamphetamine is made by scientists in that laboratory.
All right. So.
And Hitler's troops ran out of it in Stalingrad.
Yes. So that was, well, of course, that was Hitler's whole thing. It's too cold. Have this. You'll feel better. All right. Thank you, Joshua.
Enjoy.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, let's go to the city desk with your personal savior, Tim Riley. I figured we should probably stop that because we were like two calls away from getting a hold. Rick, what you do is you take three parts battery acid. Here's Tim Riley.
And if taken religiously.
Yeah.
From high atop the bottom of the coin tower in downtown Portland, CBS presents the city desk news feed, Tim Riley reporting. Okay, I'm going to change the subject. Doctors in China removed a pair of scissors from a woman's throat after she followed the item from some unknown reason. China State Television showed removing part of the pair of the scissors from the woman's throat. Speaking on state television today, one of the five doctors involved in the operation showed x-rays
showing the scissors large in the patient's throat, so send us copies of this if you have them. You'll see the sharp points across each other. We're going to use our special surgical tools to get them out.
I got okay, it's not possible to swallow a pair of scissors.
That's what this Chinese woman did.
Are we talking like the tiny little fingernail scissors?
It didn't. I don't have a measurement on
it. I want x-rays. Someone find me photos.
I have them right here.
It is. Let me see.
There you go. Speaking after the three-hour operation, the doctor said that a six-inch blade had been removed.
Oh.
The doctor said that further surgery was necessary to remove the larger part that remained in her body.
Jesus
Chinese
God.
State television reported that the woman had broken the scissors into pieces and swallowed them. Okay. So,
oh, I see. So it's kind of like your fork here.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the cutlery they supply here at CBS Radio that melted inside your lasagna.
Uh-huh.
All right, okay.
Then, in case you missed it, Zacharias Moussaoui testified today that he and the would-be shoe bomber Richard Reid were supposed to hijack a fifth airplane on 9/11 and fly it in the White House, but for some reason they didn't do it. So that's good. Country Music Television bills its annual award show as an Anything Goes affair. Only a few years ago, Kid Rock sipped from a whiskey bottle, and actress Pamela Anderson brought a man onto stage clad in underwear and cowboy boots. But if the nominations announced Wednesday are any indication, this year's CMT Awards will be a somber side, too. Carrie Underwood's Jesus Take the Wheel is nominated for Female Vocal of the Year.
You know, I don't know what it is, but I don't know if you've had this problem. I shouldn't say it's a problem. I don't know if you've had this happen to you,
Tim. Malady.
This melody. But every time you get a job somewhere, you're right down the hall from a country station.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's happened to you, too. That's like 9 talk jobs in a row I've had where my office, my desk, my cubicle, whatever, is right in like 5 feet away from a speaker that's playing today's country hits. You know, over all 4 of them, over and over and over. And, of course, right now, God love them.
And that format is the one that always keeps the chain afloat.
Oh, my God. And it's, well, yeah, and they're always the cash cow, the country station. Yep. And so it is here with Couple. Yep. Like I said, God love them. They're good people. But it's like But it's enough to crack your skull. I mean, it's like I got a speaker outside my office door that's playing Jesus Take the Wheel by Carrie Underwood like 500 times a day. It's like having Carol syrup just like force injected directly into your skull. Jesus Take the Wheel. Which seems rather presumptuous anyway. If I was a kooky morning show, we'd be having a whole lot of, like, list of other things Jesus could be.
You know, playing the national anthem.
Or, you know, Jesus, open this jar. Jesus, hold my calls. Jesus, can you dust and do a little light edging around the front of the yard? Thank you. Thank you so much. Jesus, can you break this 5? Thank you so much.
Oh, it's a stand-up spot back again.
Jesus, does this look infected? Thank you. All right. All right, are we done today?
Yeah, that'll do.
Move on.
Uh-huh.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Oregonian with a heart full of hate and a head full of snakes, our good friend Peter Carlin, TV critic extraordinaire. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm fine, except you know what occurs to me? That since you've moved over to the new station, no more intro music for me.
No, in fact, I was just talking to Sarah just now that's my fault. I have yet to load that. It's you and Ed McCarthy from CNN are still sans music.
Is that right?
It's in a box.
What music does he get?
He's in Atlanta, so we're just going to go with Georgia, probably, because we're lame and unimaginable. Imaginative. Do you have a request? Oh, wait, hold on, let me guess. You are Peter Carlin, so, I mean, if you... Is it Paul Westerberg, Ryan Adams, Elvis Costello?
Ooh,
I know my audience, I know my people.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I should think about that for a while.
All right, I will... You have carte blanche. You can choose anything you'd like as your theme music.
Okay, that's cool.
All right, just let me know, my friend.
I'll roll it. Can it have swears in it?
Yes, it can.
And nudity?
Yes. We're big fans of that here.
Cool.
I'm auditioning for that serious gig. So, hey, let's talk Sopranos first and foremost.
Okay.
Fantastic episode last night. Again, and I keep saying this every week, and it keeps being true, that series just continues to amaze me. And the proof is that they took something that we have seen done a billion times, which is sort of in the head of the guy who's lingering between life and death due to some ailment or injury.
Yeah.
And they have that moment where it's he's seeing dead relatives or he's talking to the guy who's going to ferry him to the land of the, you know, of heaven and the land of the dead or whatever. But they did it last night and it was so fantastically done.
Yeah.
It's so haunting where Tony is in this coma and he's in his hotel room and he sees this beacon and he goes to this, I mean, everybody who saw it last night, you know what I'm talking about. He goes to the family reunion, he goes to this hotel or this sort of lodge where Steve Buscemi his cousin, dead cousin Tony, like, is wanting him inside. And there's that moment where he hears Meadow's voice as a little girl coming out of the woods. And, God damn, it was unbelievably tense.
Yeah.
I mean, and I have to tell you this, that when you watch a lot of those shows, the problem with a lot of dramas, as I see it, is you never really feel like the hero's in any danger. You're always like, well, look, they're not going to kill the main character, so you're not really worried about it. There were a couple moments last night. There were about 2 minutes. For about 2 minutes, my wife and I thought they were going to kill him.
Yeah.
We really were like, this is it. They're going to kill Tony Soprano, and the series is going to go on without him. We thought he was dead.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was stunning. And now, have you seen past last night's episode?
Yep.
How much? Of course. How many more episodes have you seen?
One more.
Okay,
so far.
So you've seen next week's as well.
Yeah.
And we've seen from the previews that I guess Tony does sort of recover. And I don't know if he recovers fully, but he is back to stay, apparently.
Yes.
And it's, yeah.
Definitely up and around.
No, it was stunning. There's nothing else I can say about last night's episode except that they took a lot of sort of old plot devices and made them fresh again.
Yeah.
So, and that all that power struggle... you know, and how the family, it's amazing, by the way, how fast that family, the splinters when it looks like Tony's going to die.
Well, I know, and I think that's one of the major themes of this whole season. Again, I mean, it's like some of the first words out of Tony's mouth in the first episode was, family is what you can depend on.
Right.
But then the question is, okay, but depend on them to do what? Because if you come from a lousy family, you know, or a corrupt family, they're going to do lousy and corrupt things to you. And I think, you know, again, it's based not only in the experience of, you know, real mob characters and real mob life, but also just in dysfunctional, screwed up families.
Yeah, it's going to be strange to see how all those guys react to Tony and to Carmella, et cetera, now that he's not dead.
The fourth episode, the next week episode, is got this great bit with Polly where he discovers that his mother, and he's such a big mama's boy, you know, she's not really his mother. And he's in this whole world of extreme anxiety. Poor Polly is weeping in the hallway of the hospital.
He's,
to doing terrible violence to an innocent person.
And those characters, they run the risk so often of being parodies, but they never become parodies. They always... You know, there always is that you know, they bring it back and they keep it real, as the kids say.
You got to keep it real.
As you got to represent.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of representing in the street and the hood and all that, let's talk about that S.H.I.E.L.D. finale.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus God Almighty.
I know, that just devastated me. And to be honest, I was talking with one of my colleagues earlier today who told me that she still isn't over it.
It is, and again, we've had like 6 days, so anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about, you know, it's your fault by now if this spoils it for you. But yeah, last week when Shane kills Lem.
Right.
Kills him.
Mistakenly believes, because Shane is a moron.
Yeah, he's a dumb hick.
Yeah, he is. But he really believes that he can be as smart and as on the ball as Vic. But his problem is he's not. He's dim,
yeah.
And he makes very stupid mistakes and trusts the wrong people and does the wrong things. And once again, I mean, he had this suspicion that Lem was going to do them in, and
right.
He didn't look through, you know, the bluff that was coming from IAD, and so he kills poor Lem in the most gruesome and slowest way imaginable.
And of course, and then Lem doesn't die right away, of course, which
not.
Is doubly traumatic.
Of course, and the moment that scene, the camera angle went back to the car and I saw him, I thought, oh no, that poor bastard.
I know.
Alive.
And I mean, and of course, Lem, you know, Curtis Lemansky is the one guy who never would have turned. That's the thing; he never would have given those guys up.
Exactly.
And
he was too stupid to figure that out.
Oh God damn! And you know, I got to tell you though, I don't know how many more seasons they're going to do with the Shield. If it's just going to be one more, or they're going to keep rolling forever. But I part of me hopes that they do, that they wrap it up sooner rather than later. Because I got to tell you. A friend of mine made this observation that taken as one big story, these 5-6 seasons is one of the most impressive and saddest stories ever told.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think they understand that, and I think that's why it probably is going to end after the next 10 episodes. Because I think, you know, they set out to tell a particular story. The only thing is that, you know, you never imagine. We're not the storytellers here. We don't know what other angles, what
right.
things they might be working in. And I think what, you know, the power to that show, is the same as with The Sopranos, is the way that it becomes a kind of a metaphorical telling of larger you know, social, cultural struggles that are taking place. I mean, to me, one of the things that really, one of the very small points that gave this season so much power in the Shield was the way that in the very first episode they were grumbling about how the voters had just rejected some bond measure that was going to give the cops, you know, the money that they needed to do blah, 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 blah. And it's like, yes, exactly. That's what we see going around us all the time. I mean, people want to cut corners. They want people to work for less and, you know, they don't want to invest in these kind of social conventions that keep us all afloat. And, you know, what happens?
And
end up taking shortcuts. And these guys, you know, I mean, that's the thing about Vic. I mean, he is in many ways a moral guy, but he's learned to take these shortcuts.
And Mac Chiklis himself is, I mean, this show's been on for whatever, 5-6 years. So he physically has aged. And that works so well, too, because there's that moment in the finale when Vic is laying it all out and he's like, you know, Terry's dead, that's on me. Lem's on the run, that's on me, too. And he looks like he has just aged. He really plays just this guy who is carrying just the weight of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just so much is on his soul. I mean, he plays that so well.
Yeah.
It's just stunning. We can take a break and we come back. I'm going to talk, speaking of fantastic actors, I'm talking about Andre Brower's new show, Thief.
Yeah.
And Phil Hendry's new show, Teachers, which you crushed into little tiny Hendry bits in the paper this morning. So we'll talk about that when we get back. Peter Carlin from The Oregonian. We're going to take callers 9 and 10 right now. We're going to take callers 9 and 10 at 503-733-2970 for a pair of tickets. Winterhawks tomorrow. Winterhawks playing Seattle tomorrow. The game will be right here on Johnson 970, and you can be there to watch it if you're caller 9 and 10 right now. 503-733-2970. It is the Rick Emerson Show right here. Proud part of the CBS Radio family. You stay there. Don't go anywhere. Fantastic. Okay, here's what just happened.
Oh.
We were talking about the weather, and Sarah's like, you know, Mark Ronchetti said it's going to be, you know, warm outside. And I said, we ought to do a recap every day of what you did on that morning on Coin. To which Sarah immediately responded, oh, you mean struggle through a hangover? Good times.
Would it say that at the bottom where they put her name?
Sarah Dillon, struggling through a hangover. It's the Rick Emerson Show. In just a moment, we'll welcome back Peter Carlin from The Oregonian. We'll talk Andre Brower and Phil Hendry. Real quickly, and we're going to be talking about this all week, the Faux Film Festival, which is happening at the Hollywood Theater. Opening night is this Wednesday, March 29th. It runs through Sunday, April 2nd. And it's the only film festival that really is this way, where it's nothing but satires, parodies, etc., mockumentaries, all that stuff. They do faux trailers, commercials, faux music videos.
Are these locally originated?
A lot of them are from here. I know some people who are entering in it, actually. So the opening night is Wednesday, March 29th at the Hollywood Theater. Two blocks of films each night starting at 7 p.m., three blocks on Sunday starting at 4. Anyway, there's more information at Johnson 970. And I'll tell you what, right now I'm going to go back to Peter Carlin, but we are going to take, at this very moment, callers at 9 and 10. Callers 9 and 10, respectively, you each get a pair of tickets to the opening night Faux Film Festival happening at the Hollywood Theater this Wednesday night, running through Sunday, April 2nd. So the number is 503-733-2970. We'll take callers 9 and 10. You'll each score a pair of tickets to opening night the Faux Film Festival. We'll be talking about that more later on in the week. We're here with Peter Carlin, TV critic from The Oregonian. So, Peter.
Yes?
Let me ask you this. So, Andre Brower, who I love that guy. He was on Homicide: Life in the Street. He's been in a couple things since then, a few movies. He's got this new show that they have been pimping relentlessly on the Shield called Thief.
Yeah.
And so what is the word on Thief? Because I've been waiting for, like, people wait for the second coming of Christ.
Well, it's fine. I mean, I watched a few episodes and just kind of felt a little overwhelmed. It's a little bleak to my eyes, and it was a little, I kind of, and again, I'm watching, I really focused on it after, just in the days after that last Shield episode, which
right.
We're all still reeling from.
Totally.
But it's again, I mean, you're talking about a very sort of dark look at the shadier sides of human nature, and both within particular individuals and larger sort of social systems. And then you have to ask yourself, like, where is the, I mean, even the Shield has a lot of this kind of leavening humor to it. Parts of it are hysterically funny. And The Sopranos is practically, in many ways, a comedy show.
Sure, sure.
This doesn't have that. It has a kind of a grim and sense of focus. And to me, at least in the first couple episodes that I saw, I felt like, I don't know if I want to spend time with these people.
Well, that was me with that Over There show, that Botched Gulf War. It was like, I don't need to put this in my head.
Well, Botchka, that show was actually way more of a failure than anybody wanted to acknowledge, I think, because the topic was so, it was so gutsy of them to take it on and to really try to do a big kind of cinematic week-to-week thing and really get into the gray areas of war. But the problem was, like, it was all kind of summarized by that awful seat theme song it had, which was written by the co-creator and maybe even performed by him. He was exceptionally proud of it. I got that he spoke of it in great terms
at
his press conference in L.A. And then later, I remember when I watched the first episode, you know, they showed that guy playing the song for the first time.
Right.
And the lyrics are really stupid, but then you think, well, he's a grunt, you know.
Right.
These guys aren't poets. But then suddenly the music swells and you realize, no, that's the theme song.
I know. And it's cringe-inducingly bad.
Yeah, it's like this dream. He's like, he's a successful TV producer, but really he wants Bruce Springsteen. And you know what? He's not.
It ain't happening. You got to come down and be in the studio one of these days because we're always running out of time.
Dude, well, we'll have plenty to talk about in a few weeks, won't we?
Yes. Wait, will we?
Well, my book comes out, moron.
Oh, sorry. May 6th, Catch a Wave.
May 2.
I'm sorry,
You're close.
May 2nd. Yeah. Amazon claims it's May 6th. That's not my fault.
Is that right, Amazon?
Amazon claims it's May 6th. You might want to get a good crack a whip over there.
I don't care. Just hit the buy button.
I got one-click purchasing set, so I'm good. May 2nd, Catch a Wave. Wait, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson?
That's the one.
Yeah, baby. Look who committed the title to memory.
There you are. I love it.
All right, so we have, unfortunately, very little
time.
Hold
it up for the cameras, okay?
And I'm not going to do the Leno thing where I prop it up and pretend that I've read it. I'm actually going to read it.
Yes.
All right, so you promise to cut? You got to do a full in-studio spot to promote your book.
Dude, I'll be there for 3 straight hours.
God.
I'll be there, like, typing up cue cards for you beforehand.
God bless you. You're a good human being, Peter Carlin.
Sweeping up the studio afterwards.
So we got, like, no time here, but you give a thumbs down to the Hendry sitcom.
Yeah, it stinks. And he, at the press conference, would not shut up to the detriment of everyone else on the panel who sat there looking at their shoes.
Yeah, that's surprising.
Yeah.
I'm stunned by that. we should probably move on at this point. Peter, okay, so I apologize.
But his radio show is hysterically, is really brilliant and fun. Hey, is that on your show?
It is.
On your air?
It is. He is actually, he is one of the single most talented people I've ever heard. So.
Yes. Well, right. He's done a disservice by this show.
And on that note, next week we will have more time with you, and then when your book comes out, we will pimp it like nobody. We'll turn it out like a $2 whore.
There you go.
All right, Peter Carlin, thank you, my friend.
Talk to you later.
Read him in print and online, Peter Carlin for The Oregonian. We want to thank CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy, Clyde Lewis's Ground Zero, The Oregonian's Peter Carlin, The Rick Emerson Show, produced today and every day by the lovely Sarah X. Dillon for Johnson 970, a proud part of the CBS Radio family, news director Tim Riley, like us at 3, world-famous Phil Hendry Show at 7. We'll see you in 21 hours. As always, I'll let the bastards grind you down. Thank you for listening. See you all tomorrow. Be safe. Bye.
Hold me like you did by the lake on